From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we take a look at something that occurs every day at the United Nations in New York, and that generally escapes the attention of the American media. A press briefing by the spokesperson for the Secretary General, Stefan Dujarric, reviewing the work of the UN around the world and taking questions from the press. Among the topics discussed Thursday were countries from Afghanistan to Yemen and subjects that included border incidents, ceasefires, political affairs, natural disasters, and violence. This is the spokesperson for the Secretary General of the United Nations, Stefan Dujarric, in New York at the United Nations headquarters Thursday.
How's everybody today? Good? Excellent. All right. Good afternoon. The Secretary General will be traveling to Canada this Saturday, 9th of June, to attend the summit of the G7 in Charlevoix in Quebec. He will be participating in the outreach session of the G7, and that session is entitled Healthy, Productive, Resilient Oceans and Seas, Coasts and Communities. And he will be attending that session along with the leaders of the G7 and several other countries, as well as heads of international organizations. He will also hold a bilateral meeting with Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, on the sidelines of the meeting, as well as other heads of state and government also present at the G7. And the Secretary General will be back in New York that day and be back here the evening of the 7th. I have a senior personnel appointment. The Secretary General has announced the appointment of Shireen Dodson of the United States as the new United Nations Ombudsman. She will succeed John Barkat, to whom the Secretary General is grateful for his commitment and dedicated service to the organization. The Secretary General also wishes to extend his appreciations to James Lee, who is currently serving as the acting UN Ombudsman. Ms. Dodson brings to the position over 30 years of diverse leadership experience in business, government, and nonprofit organizations. She's currently the Ombudsman of the U.S. State Department, a position she assumed in 2010. And the Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, Rosemary DiCarlo, today visited Mogadishu in Somalia, where she held a series of meetings with senior government officials to reiterate the UN's support to the people and federal government of Somalia. She was accompanied by the Secretary General's Special Representative for that country, Michael Keating. Ms. DiCarlo said that Somalia is at a critical juncture and stressed that the unity of Somalis is essential to advance federalism, reduce violence, defeat extremism, and tackle the humanitarian challenges and deliver real benefits to the population. Also today, the UN and its partners, including the African Union and the European Union, welcomed the outcomes of this week's National Security Council meeting held in Baidoa, the capital of Southwest State in Somalia. During the meeting, the federal government the federal government, federal member states, and Benadir region and various ministries reached key agreements on the transition plan, revenue sharing, and the electoral model for the 2020 elections. And our humanitarian colleagues in the Central African Republic tell us that amid renewed fighting, at least 9 humanitarian compounds have been looted since May in the Central African Republic's second largest city of Bambari, prompting many NGOs to temporarily suspend or curtail assistance to an already struggling civilian population. Bambari has more than 37,000 internally displaced people living in 9 sites. They rely on humanitarian support for health care, nutritional support for children suffering from acute or severe malnutrition, food rations, and psychosocial support for survivors of gender-based violence. The resurgence of violence in Bambari comes at a time when the humanitarian community is making every level to raise the funding for the humanitarian response plan. In the first half of 2018, only $85.5 million, or 17%, of the $515 million urgently needed to help 1.9 million people in need has been received. And from Afghanistan, the UN mission in Afghanistan today welcomed the announcement by the government for a temporary ceasefire with the Taliban. The UN commends the stated preparedness of the Afghan authorities to initiate in good faith any steps towards formal peace process. And that was a statement from the Secretary General Special Representative, Tamadit Tadamichi Yamamoto. The ceasefire follows the Afghan government's call for unconditional peace talks with the Taliban at the Kabul Process 2 conference that was held in the Afghan capital in February. And the special envoy for Syria, Staffan de Mistura, just concluded consultations on the Syrian political process. Those discussions took place in Istanbul earlier today. And he also, while there, he met with Turkish authorities as well as officials from the Syrian National Coalition and the Syrian Opposition Coalition. The envoy is planning to continue his regional consultations in the coming days. And from the Congo, a couple of updates on Ebola. Distribution of World Food Program rations have begun in the DRC's Ebola-hit Equateur province. This is part of an effort to support those...
In this video, we will be discussing how to troubleshoot the dining
room. I can't turn the damn thing.
Well, just... There we go.
Okay.
All right. In this video, we're going to learn about the World Food Program's ration distribution. Maybe you want to take the computer outside, Evelyn. Evelyn, maybe just take the computer out.
There are three mechanisms.
I'm trying to turn the whole computer on.
Okay.
All right. Back to you.
Let's try it one more time. All right. Let's try it again. The World Food Program's rations have begun being distributed in Equateur province, which has been hard hit by Ebola. This is part of an effort to support those directly affected by the latest outbreak of the deadly virus and limit risky population movements. Families of Ebola patients discharged from treatment centers and of those who have had contact with them or suspected victims are receiving up to 3 months' supplies of cereal and beans. A projected 1,000 people are to be immediately assisted. And also on Ebola, the World Health Organization is supporting the 9 countries that border the Democratic Republic of the Congo to scale up their national emergency preparedness and response capacities. These countries are Angola, Burundi, the Central African Republic, the Republic of the Congo, Rwanda, South Sudan, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zambia. The World Health Organization's recommendations are meant to ensure that the countries are operationally ready to prevent the importation of cases, implement risk mitigation, detection, and response measures for Ebola. And our colleagues at the UN Migrants Agency, IOM, are assisting survivors from a boat that capsized off the coast of Yemen. At least 100 Ethiopian migrants were crammed into a boat that left from Somalia on Tuesday and was headed to the Gulf countries when it got hit with a high wave. IOM says that 46 people drowned and 16 remain missing. IOM is providing medical assistance, health, food, and psychosocial support for the survivors. And an update on Guatemala, where colleagues from the humanitarian coordination team have assessed the needs in shelters near the south center city of Escuintla, the most affected area by the massive eruption of El Fuego. The team is assisting the government in the humanitarian response, providing psychosocial support, hygiene kits, mattresses, and blankets, among other provisions. And a couple of answered a couple of questions I was asked offline, one on the Ukraine. And the Secretary General's response to the PRST adopted yesterday, and I can say the Secretary General welcomes yesterday's presidential statement adopted in the Security Council on the situation in eastern Ukraine. He fully shares the concerns expressed by the Security Council about the deterioration of the security situation in eastern Ukraine and the need to do more to alleviate the suffering of the civilian population. This needs to be all the more important and urgent, as highlighted by the recent shelling of Donetsk filter station, which has been rendered temporarily inoperative. The Secretary General reiterates the determination of the UN to continue with all the efforts to address deteriorating humanitarian situation in Ukraine, in eastern Ukraine, and urges greater humanitarian access to support the Humanitarian Response Plan of 2018, which remains severely underfunded. The Secretary General also joins the Security Council's call to all parties to commit to the peace process and to do their utmost to achieve progress in the implementation of the Minsk Agreement. And I was also asked earlier about Ethiopia's stated decision to implement the Algiers Peace Agreement. And I can say that the Secretary General was pleased to hear the statement by the Executive Committee of the Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front indicating Ethiopia's decision to implement the Algiers peace agreement signed between the two countries in 2000, and the subsequent decisions by the Eritrea-Ethiopia Boundary Commission on the border between the two countries. We reiterate the UN's readiness to play a role in taking the decision forward, including by assisting the parties in the implementation of the border ruling as envisaged in the peace agreement. We look forward to receiving additional information on the way forward. Our monthly food price index report. Global agricultural food commodities prices rose in May, with dairy prices jumping significantly. That's according to the FAO's price index, which is up 1.2% from April. The increase built on a recent trend featuring rising price quotations of major cereals and dairy products and weak ones for sugar and vegetable oils. The FAO has increased its forecast for the world cereal production for 2018. More information online. And our friends at UNICEF today launched a new parenting site as part of their Super Dads campaign, recognizing fathers' role in their children's early development. The online site will bring together fathers from across the world to share their parenting tips, their struggles, their needs, and their successes. UNICEF is calling for more support for fathers globally, including for policies that give parents the time and resources needed to spend quality time with their children. And as Father's Day celebrated across nearly 90 countries this month, UNICEF renews its call to break down cultural, financial barriers preventing fathers from spending quality time with young children. And today we have reached the temperature of 103 because Nauru has joined the honor roll, having paid its dues in full. And I will stop there. Yes.
Thank you, Stefan. I want to ask about the water crisis in Iraq. Turkey started holding back water on the Tigris River, causing further water shortage in Iraq, as nearly 70% of Iraq's need of water is coming from Tigris and Euphrates, those two rivers, which are coming from Turkey. What is the U.S. position about
this? Sure. We're very much aware of the communications between the government of Turkey and Iraq regarding the new Ilusu Dam that Turkey is building on the Tigris River. The U.N. office in Iraq hopes that the government of Iraq and Turkey can resolve the matter through dialogue.
Thank you.
Mr. Roth.
The 103 temperature reading is sometimes what it's like in our offices here in the summer. But moving on.
Take your tie off, Richard. You'll feel more comfortable.
I don't want to embarrass anyone. The UN envoy in Yemen, or for Yemen, Martin Griffiths, is making the rounds. We know he's coming to the council mid-month. Can you comment on a Reuters report that he has a so-called peace plan, which includes the Houthis giving up heavy ballistic missiles in return for an end to the Saudi bombing campaign with a transitional government agreement? Anything on the paper, on the table like this that you, I know it would be difficult for you to confirm in toto. Can you give us an outline of something?
In toto? I'll do
We're
it.
Not in Kansas, though, yes. So please, you, this is New York, you can be honest.
Yes. Okay, sorry. No, we've seen the report. We're not going to comment on the veracity of a document that may or may not have been leaked. Mr. Griffiths has been making the rounds in Yemen and in the region in preparation for his presentation to the Security Council next week, I think on the 18th or the 19th. And I think at that time he will be ready to share where he thinks, where he feels the situation is, but he is making great efforts in trying to get the parties to reach a political agreement to put an end to this conflict in Yemen, which has caused suffering for so many people in the country. Oleg, and then Matthew.
Thanks, Stefan. Staying on Yemen, I believe the meeting on Yemen is going to be in a week, so in the council. And I'm sure you've seen the reports from MSF that they're pulling stuff out of Yemen. I believe it's like more than 70 people. And this, they say it would have a crippling effect on the operations in Yemen. What is the UN right now doing in light of possible offensive?
I'm not aware of any changes in our staffing on the ground. As always, our colleagues
that operate in Yemen do so under very difficult circumstances. The security is analyzed on day-to-day, but I'm not aware of any changes. But obviously, any loss of humanitarian staff creates even greater challenges to the ones that already exist.
Taking into account the scale of the operation MSF is doing in Yemen, is the UN prepared to somehow substitute what
they're
doing?
I don't have the operational details of what MSF is doing in Yemen, but I don't think we're in a position to take over the work that our partners are doing on the ground. And you know, the vast majority of the work of humanitarian work done in Yemen is done, in fact, by Yemeni nationals. Yep.
Thank you, Stefan. I'd like to ask about this memorandum of understanding the UN has reached with the government of Myanmar. I was wondering if there is a timeline for this agreement to be implemented for the safe, dignified, and voluntary return of the Rohingya refugees. Thank you.
No, there is no. I'm not aware of any timeline. I think, as we said yesterday, the conditions don't exist for that return don't exist as of yet. You know, the agreement was negotiated with UNHCR, UNDP, and the government of Myanmar. Our colleagues in Myanmar are continuing to engage communities in designing the activities implemented under the agreement and provide independent information to refugees about the conditions on the ground in order to inform them their return decision. Basically, the decision to return belongs to the individual. No one should be or can be forced to return. It's about us working with the government of Myanmar to ensure that the conditions for safe and dignified and voluntary return exist. But the assessment of those conditions at the end will have to be made by individuals. Yes, sir, and then Matthew.
Bonjour, monsieur. Stefan, this is Deepak Arora from the Tribune Online. There have been reports of a mysterious illness striking American diplomats in Guangzhou in southern China. And there have been also reports of Canadian and U.S. diplomats experiencing the similar sonic attacks in Cuba. So what has been the response of the Secretary General on this? And has he directed WHO to work on this mysterious...
I've seen the press reports. It is not something that we're involved in any way. Yes, ma'am.
Sure. I want to ask a follow-up on Yemen and something on UNHCR or the Secretary General said otherwise. In terms of Yemen, just in terms of Martin Griffith and his plans, it seems like The Norwegian Refugee Council has called on the Saudi-led coalition to investigate a bomb that fell right next to its facility in Sana'a on the 5th of June. And I'm just wondering, one, does the UN is Mr. Griffiths or whoever here in the Secretariat is looking at this, are they satisfied with the way in which the Saudi-led coalition has investigated and acted on its in the falling of its bombs? And what's the status of the Children in Armed Conflict report, which would seem to – I know that last year they were upgraded in terms of their attempts to minimize civilian casualties, and it looks like NRC is saying these steps are not
– Well, you know, the report should be out soon. The report will be looking at the year of 2017, right? But it'll be sent to the Council probably not next couple of weeks, not too long from now. We have been continuously concerned with the civilian death toll, the attacks on civilians, the attack on civilian infrastructure, and we have repeatedly called on the coalition and other parties to fully investigate those incidents. Your next question.
Sure. I wondered, yesterday you'd said in terms of this settlement of retaliation claims by Ms. Hunt Mathis, you directed me to read their joint statement. Mm-hmm. So I've read it. But I also note that, this is why I'm coming back to you with this, she's barred from speaking beyond this joint statement as a condition of her settlement. And I'm wondering, first, does the Secretary General think on issues having to do with alleged retaliation for wanting to investigate rape, is it appropriate to put a gag order on a UN person? And also, she did somehow manage, and I'm not sure it's published, so here's her quote beyond what they did jointly. She said, "The UN justice system needs to be placed entirely outside the purview of the UN, which cannot be at the same time party and judge." So that seems to be something on which the Secretary General should have a response. It's about the system as a whole.
The The system of the administration of justice in the UN was reformed a few years ago. Its judges are independent. The Secretary General has no say in how the judges do their work. The administration represents itself in front of the tribunals, and staff do too. And sometimes rulings go against the administration. Sometimes they go for the administration.
What about this gag order issue?
I'm not going to comment on the specifics of the case, of which I'm not aware. Evelyn, and then Linda, I think you had a question, then back to Oleg.
Yeah, Amnesty International had an item today on raids into villages in Mozambique by al-Shabaab, probably not related to Somalia. I just wondered if, and people, villagers killed quite frequently.
I wonder
if you had a report
on
that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Amnesty International report. It's something that's very much on our radar and something that we're very much concerned about, this violence. Linda.
Thank you, Steph. Regarding the Syrian political process, you mentioned that the UN envoy is in Istanbul, or was in Istanbul to meet with Syrian opposition leaders, and that there would be other meetings in the region. I was just wondering if you can share with us where else the meetings will be taking place. And with
As soon as we get updates from him, we'll share them with you. But he regularly travels around the region. But I'll see if I can get a bit more detail. Oleg, and then we'll come back.
On Syria, with this announcement on the consultations by the special envoy, does this mean we're coming closer to resumption of negotiations?
Look, I think we've been at this for quite some time. It's a process, I think, that's frustratingly slow, not least for the people of Syria. We're taking it step by step. Yeah, go ahead.
On Ukraine, given this lack of fund, this was discussed a lot in the council meetings elsewhere. The UN has a practice of convening donor pledging conferences. Mm-hmm. Maybe this could be the case in the case of Ukraine.
Possibly. Yes, that's a good valid point. Richard.
It's summer, but this question symbolically has some weight to it, though it doesn't compare to some of the other topics. And people say the UN is behind the times. I can't remember how long it's been, but when thousands walk into the UN lobby, the clock on the wall is an hour behind or completely off. And maybe we discussed this months ago. I can't remember, and maybe it's officially broken. But
which clock?
The on the wall
in the visitors' lobby,
the elevators. Yeah, no, in the secretariat lobby.
Okay. Well, let me see what the if I can move the clock even further back.
Time stands still here, but not that bad.
Yes, I know. At least hopefully the year's right. Evelyn, then Matthew.
On Ethiopia, Eritrea, the UN, is there a peacekeeping force envisioned? Or any details? Because the UN has
seen this
UN
was
before.
Present in Ethiopia, Eritrea for a long time. The mission closed.
I remember.
We were also involved in the border commission. As I said, we're willing to help the parties as much as possible. Matthew, then Linda.
Is there anything planned?
No, as I said, we're looking forward to hearing more details. Go ahead, Matthew, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to ask you this. It has to do with Cameroon. It's reported that, and it's reported, it's identified Samuel Eto'o, the football player, as a UN goodwill ambassador, and it said that he will be touring with government officials, the Anglophone areas, trying to encourage people to either go back to school or stop protesting. And so there's a lot of pushback against it, and I wanted to know, one, when's the last time Mr. Fall was in the area? Maybe you have it or could find it.
There's nothing more than what is publicly known.
Is this number? Would Samuel Eto'o's trip, if it takes place, he's in Yaoundé, would it be as a UN goodwill ambassador? And if so, what would you say?
I have to check what his status is and who he
actually
works for.
What people are saying is that he said nothing about this crisis the whole time.
I'm not debating it. I just have to see what the details are.
I'd appreciate an answer on it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Linda.
Thank you, Steph. I believe there was a meeting last evening between the Secretary General and various Arab and other ambassadors, and I was wondering if you could share some information.
No, there's no read. I was on the broad Middle East situation, but nothing to share.
What about the meeting with the Africa group today? Is that about budget issues?
No,
is it about personnel?
I'll try to get some details. Thank you. Brendan, all yours.
That was the spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, Stephane Dujarric, at the UN headquarters on Thursday, doing his daily press briefing. On Thursday, Russia's President Vladimir Putin held a marathon four-hour teleconference with constituents from around the Russian Federation and members of the assembled press and various government agencies. RT's Murad Gazdiev has more.
Well, it's difficult to sum up 4 hours and 20 minutes of questions and answers, but some of the things that really stood out was what Vladimir Putin had to say about foreign affairs. And here, for example, Vladimir Putin recently presented a slew of super weapons. We're talking here about bigger, more powerful, faster nuclear missiles, ballistic missiles, as well as hypersonic missiles, which travel at 6-7 kilometers a second through the atmosphere, about nuclear-powered missiles. And one viewer challenged Vladimir Putin, saying, you know, does this stuff really exist?
There are those who doubt new Russian weapons are soon going to be put into service. Back in 2004, they were doubting the avant-garde system. But now we see it in Syria. And that's not everything that we're planning to produce and put into service. As I said in my address, it's too early to talk about it, but we will speak out soon.
The president stressed that this isn't about saber-rattling or waving your guns around or, you know, measuring anything with anyone, but this is about parity. This is about making sure that Russia has a deterrent, that no enemy, no potential opponent can overcome Russia. And here, another particularly worried viewer asked Vladimir Putin how close we are to World War III.
You know, you can recall Einstein's words. He said, I don't know with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. The understanding of the fact that World War III may be the end of modern civilization must deter us from extreme actions on the international scene.
All this war talk and fears is no surprise, given current tensions between the East and the West, between Russia and the United States and its allies. And people ask, you know, when is this going to end? When is this division going to end, these sanctions, these restrictions? And Vladimir Putin said that they won't until we all treat each other as equals, until nations learn to respect each other and to compromise, to understand that there are differences and various countries have various interests. He pointed out Europe, where he says winds are changing. There is now open talk of lifting sanctions against Russia. Vladimir Putin stressed that, you know, sanctions and restrictions, they've never served anyone. They always come back to bite whoever put them in place. And he pointed to the trade war that has just erupted between Europe and the United States, saying that the new tariffs that Washington has slapped on the Europeans, which have made them very unhappy, those aren't so much tariffs as they are sanctions.
One of the French government's ministers recently said that the U.S. shouldn't be allowed to become the economic policeman of the world, and he spoke about it publicly. The former German minister of finance publicly said that Germany hasn't been a fully sovereign state since 1945. Everybody can see what's going on, but probably our partners thought it would never affect them. That kind of politics is counterproductive, a politics of limitations and sanctions.
Now, that was what Vladimir Putin had to say about foreign policy. Obviously, most of what was talked about in this Q&A session was domestic affairs, domestic things, things that worry Russians, such as salary, taxes, healthcare, education, corruption, always a big one. But Vladimir Putin also spoke about the upcoming World Cup, due to kick off in about a week in all over Russia, really. And he said that the Russian team lately hasn't played as well, perhaps, as some would expect. And He said he hoped that now that the World Cup is here, they'll really show what they've got.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.